And we'll be talking more about Judge Sotomayor in the barbershop. That's the time every week where the guys weigh in on the news and what's on their minds. Sitting in the chairs for a shape-up this week are freelance writer Jimmy Israel, civil rights attorney and editor Arsalan Iftikhar, political science professor Lester Spence, and columnist Gustavo Arellano. I may jump in here or there, but for now, take it away, Jimmy.
Thanks, Michelle. Hey, yo, fellas, welcome to the shop. What's new?
Hey.
What's up?
Oh, man. Well, you know, just like Michelle was saying, you know, Judge Sonia Sotomayor put through the ringer this week at her Supreme Court confirmations in Washington, D.C. Now, it was kind of the anticlimactic. You know, we haven't seen anything quite this relatively tame, you know, in some time. Now, you know, she went up there and she represented, and she even had a really human moment with the junior senator Al Franken when they talked about their love of Perry Mason, you know, and he kind of softened her up before he went in hard about abortion, privacy, and net neutrality. Yo, Gustavo, hey, man, what's up?
What's up, man?
So what do you think? Would she be confirmed? I mean, is it a no-brainer?
It's a slam dunk, absolutely. The Democrats have always enjoyed, have always admired her, and even it was only a couple Republicans, really, I think, that were really trying to hammer it in. What I found most fascinating, or rather most disgusting about the hearings, though, was that joke that Senator Tom Coburn of Oklahoma did when she was trying to explain something, and then so he goes in his best Ricky Ricardo voice, "You have some splaining to do."
Oh, and the worst, yeah, that was ugly.
Yeah. The worst part of the joke, though, is that Ricky Ricardo was a Cuban. Sotomayor is a Puerto Rican. So that just shows that, you know, many people, they still don't know they're Latinos. That's, to me, what was the most insulting part.
You know, Ruben Navarrete, who joins us here most of the time, had a column this week where he says what he thought was most important about it was that these five guys just had to put her in her place.
Right.
Many of whom are not lawyers, none of whom's ever been a judge. And he says that really what it was about is putting her in her place. Like, who does she think she is? And I just wondered if anybody else felt that way.
Yeah, I mean, this is Arsalan. I thought, you know, from at least the seven Republican members of the Judiciary Committee, this was essentially a big game of gotcha. I think that they were just, you know, trying to sort of pin her in a corner, trying to, you know, not look at her judicial record, look at, you know, parsing the words of some statements that she made. And I thought she handled it like a stone-cold gangster. I thought that, you know...
you don't want to say that. Not another stereotype.
But on the whole question of her comments outside the courtroom playing a role, remember, we reported on the fact that the ranking Republican on the committee, Jeff Sessions of Alabama, when he was a former U.S. attorney, was one of the very few in half a century to be rejected for a federal judgeship because of statements that he made in the office publicly about cases that he had tried, and people said that this his comments outside represented a sort of a pattern of thinking that was disqualifying. The difference here, though, I would have to say, he had no judicial record. She has 17 years on the bench that you
Absolutely.
Can look at. That's the question.
Well, and another thing very quickly, you know, even Senator Lindsey Graham, a Republican from South Carolina, conceded that, you know, if you look at her judicial record, it's definitely within the mainstream. It might be a little center, left of center, but it's definitely within the mainstream of, you know, the way that federal judges and Supreme Court nominees have always operated.
Yeah, man, and to your point, she kept her cool and she didn't get off into the whole the race baiting, any of the kind of race talk, and she sidestepped all the hard questions, you know, which is, you know what, that's as it should be. You know, don't diss her for that. L. Spence, the good doctor, check in.
Well, these things have become more of a ritual than anything else, so very rarely do you actually get, some real rich, nuanced statement that people can then use to, I mean, people don't even talk about their records, right? I mean, so they talked about, she talked about abortion and she was talking about how she couldn't talk about, you know, she couldn't make a decision without a case in front of her. I mean, there are not, even though we know how she would vote if that case were in front of her, right? I mean, my colleagues at WashU committed, they conducted a study that shows that you can predict most of a judge's rulings just by their party, right? Mm-hmm. So there's this whole set of politics that's going on that you never see discussed. And for that reason, I largely tuned out.
But is that really strange? I mean, isn't from the standpoint of the voter, you'd say elections have consequences, do they not? I mean, if you put certain people in office, you would expect that they would appoint judges that conform within appropriate frameworks. Lester, can I just ask you a question before we move on? I know Jimmy wants to talk about other things, but one of the things I was curious about is why none of the Republicans on the committee seemed to search for any middle ground. It was like they very clearly staked out their position on the right and didn't. There seemed to be no acknowledgement that there might be this burgeoning Latino population, that there is a center. It seemed to me it was all about you're wrong. Yeah. You are so involved in minority politics, you don't get, you know, where. And I just was I found it odd that there was no. They were so staked with one side of the argument that there didn't seem to be any continuum. That's what's surprising. And Democratic side, for example, Arlen Specter, for example, who is now a Democrat, questioned her very closely. So I was just curious about that, and I wondered if you were.
Oh, thanks. That's an excellent question. We've talked about this before. Their constituencies don't allow them to, right? So their constituencies are becoming more and more white. Their party is becoming more and more white. And rather than looking at the numbers towards the future, what they're looking at is that next election. And that makes them have to really, really move to the extreme right and be out of step with the American population. And that's going to really hurt their party in the future.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Tell Me More from NPR News. I'm speaking with Jimmy Israel, Arsalan Iftikhar, Gustavo Arellano, and Professor Lester Spence in the barbershop. Back to you, Jimmy.
Thanks, Michelle. Hey, President Barack Obama, you got to love when he gets on the mic, man. He gave a rousing speech during the centennial celebration of the NAACP. Now, you know, that whole thing just wrapped up this week, and I was on CNN last week talking to some dude, and I had to go in. You know, Lester, you know I had to go in hard on him and say, you know, I'm not convinced that we still need the NAACP in its current form. Now, I couldn't be honest if I said, you know, we didn't need them at some point, but we're not being lynched as often. So maybe the NAACP is time today. They kind of switched the program up and maybe even got the internet. You know, what do you say, Doctor?
Maybe even got the internet. That's funny because I actually have a close friend who works for the NAACP, and he talked about how they didn't have email. Their computers were like 20 years old. I mean, this is like last year. But
right.
what I was fascinated about this speech, and this speech really, really upset me, particularly when you take it and when you take it along with the speech he gave in Africa just Monday. Right. So he basically jacks black people on both sides of the Atlantic within like 5 days. All he needs to do is hit Brazil and he has the trifecta. Right. what he does in this NAACP speech is he gives a lot of weak policy prescriptions. Right. So he's willing to spend $50 billion on poverty, which is a lot, except when you think about the $800 billion he thought he spent on to bail the financiers out. Right. Then what he does is he hits you hard with the black parent line about how black parents need to take their kids away from the Xboxes, et cetera, et cetera. I'm a parent of 5 kids. Be the president. Don't tell me how to raise
my
kids.
Right.
I mean, in this particular economic context, what we need is a hard-hitting set of policies that deal with government. Don't tell me how to parent.
All right. I got to co-sign that. Way to go hard on Obama, man. Way to go in on him. My man, Gustavo. You know, Julian Bond has been talking about, he was talking about, and also Barack Obama were talking about how the NAACP is an organization not just for black people, but all people of color. What can the NAACP do for our brown brothers?
It's been done before. In fact, the NAACP was the precursor to Brown versus Board of Education was a case actually out here in Orange County, California, called Mendez versus Westminster, which ultimately outlawed segregation against Mexican kids in Orange County schools and 4 school districts. And filing a friend of the court case on behalf of Mendez versus Westminster was no other than Thurgood Marshall when he was just a humble lawyer for the NAACP. So the NAACP has always been in other struggles as well. All the civil rights organizations, also, you know, back in the days, the Japanese American Public League, the Anti-Defamation League, all these civil rights organizations know that it's not just their communities who are being attacked. It's all, you know, communities of color, you know, minorities. We need, if one community is being discriminated against, then all communities are being discriminated against. So in that sense, Obama really was, it was a good point for him to say, to remind people that the NAACP, among others, it is a multicultural coalition of folks that do help each other out. Of course, in this case, particularly, it's for African Americans.
Right. If he would just stop trying to parent everybody's kids
and
focus.
Yeah. I agree with that, too.
Can I ask Arsalan? I was going to ask Arsalan, just because I was particularly curious what Gustavo and Arsalan think, just because the younger generation tends to be the people who are more skeptical about these organizations to say, well, what's the why do we need that?
And well, for me, being the resident civil rights lawyer in the barbershop, I think
that's
that,
right.
I think the
NAACP, only one actually.
Well, yeah. I think that the
pop that collar, brother.
After I brush my shoulder off, I'm gonna co-sign Gustavo completely. You know, when you look at Brown v. Board of Education, you know, you had Thurgood Marshall, who was then a volunteer lawyer for the NAACP Legal Defense Fund, and now you had a case of a 7-year-old girl in Kansas, which eventually led to good law being passed in Title VII of the Civil Rights Act dealing with employment discrimination. So, you know, when civil rights groups do impact litigation, it has a residual effect for all Americans. And that's why I think that civil rights groups of all sorts, like Gustavo said, are very necessary as we move further into the 21st century.
All right, fellas. Well, from the world of sports, Manny Acta fired as the manager of the Washington Nationals. Small wonder, homeboy got the fourth worst winning percentage since 1950. Ooh. With at least 350 games managed. Now, homeboy, also 3 seasons, he posted 158, 252 record. Oh, man. I don't know. Gustavo, did he get a good shot? Or, I mean, to me, it looks like he got a good shot.
Yeah, I feel bad for the Nationals because there was one year where it seemed like they were maybe going to start becoming good, and then they've just tanked. But hey, at least it's not the Pittsburgh Pirates. They're going to set the record for the most consecutive losing seasons of any sports franchise in major four sports.
That
so
really
I feel bad for the Nationals. I feel bad for ACTA. But, you know, when it comes to sports, that is a great equalizer. If you don't win, you're out, no matter what race you are eventually.
You know what's, though? You know what's funny is that Manny ACTA is like the most popular member of the team.
Yeah.
For real. Wow. I mean, in terms of the public profile, in terms of people being visible and people sort of knowing who he is. I don't know whether it's because he was one of only two Latino general managers in Major League Baseball, or is it because he's the youngest or one of the youngest, if not the youngest, and so he's very highly visible. I don't know. What do you think, Arslan? You here?
Well, I
gotta win.
You know, the Nationals are 23-61 going into the All-Star break. They're the worst record in the league, and like Gustavo said, you know, sports is about winning. If you can't win, you're out. You know, I think that we've seen more of a representation of Latino general managers in Major League Baseball than we have of black coaches in the NFL. But again, you know, the argument could be made either way.
Hmm. Well, I don't know if that's true.
Yeah,
Lester,
I think it's when we can point to any single individual and say, okay, well, no, their record sucks, they need to go. But what's the bigger question is, what does this mean for the future Latino GMs in the league, right?
Does it? Mm-hmm. I mean, that's the question: does it mean anything, or is it just that?
Yeah,
we still have
Omar Minaya with the New York Mets,
right?
So we still got one.
Ozzie
Guillen. We got one left.
We got this
one
guy. So
that one guy, yeah.
Yeah, we got one guy, so we're still good to go. But that's not the case. And the thing is with Latinos in baseball, because so many of them don't come from America, they don't necessarily have the same type of political leverage that, say, African Americans would to push for more GMs, right? I mean, what we're looking at is this guy being the case, and I'm giving the best case scenario, I mean, best worst case scenario, granted, this guy being the case for no more Latino GMs.
I would hope that it wouldn't be interpreted that way. I mean, you know, people don't say if a white guy gets fired, nobody says, oh, we can't do that again.
Right. I mean,
we tried that. That doesn't
you know,
work.
Michelle, the Nationals are
numbers.
You know,
I know what you're saying.
Well, Michelle and I live in Washington, so we see how bad the Nationals. I mean, they're the bad news bears of Major League Baseball.
I'm sorry,
right now.
Forgive me. Let me just clarify that, just so that I don't have to answer these letters. He's not a GM. He's just a manager. Just a manager. He's a manager. He's a manager,
yeah,
not
coach.
A general
manager. Right,
just to clarify, that was my error, so I apologize for that. But still, I don't know. I mean, I don't know. He is cool, though. I'm sorry. I know he is. He's cool. He wears his hat.
It's cool to be cool, but you have to win. You know, I mean, we can't be paying you millions of dollars.
I'm sorry.
And you're not producing, so it's like that.
It's harsh in here.
But that's the type of job they get.
It's harsh. Jimmy Israel, thanks everybody. Jimmy Israel is a freelance journalist who writes for TheRoot.com and TV1 Online. He joined us from member station WCPN in Cleveland. Gustavo Arellano writes the Ask a Mexican column for the Orange County Weekly, and he joined us from KUCI in Irvine, California. Lester Spence is a political science professor at Johns Hopkins University, and Arslan Iftikhar is the founder of TheMuslimGuy.com and a civil rights attorney, and they were both here with me in our studios in Washington. Gentlemen, thank you.
Peace.
Thanks.
Yep, yep.